Hey, super friends, before we get into our regular super episode, I want to tell you about my Kickstarter Super Best Friend. It is the next Kickstarter that we're launching. It is a superhero adventure that asks, if you were the best friend of the world's greatest superhero, wouldn't you live stream his every adventure too? It is a 48-page comic adventure starring Maddie Moore, the best friend of the world's greatest superhero, Captain Terrific. And fun fact, Captain Terrific is a character that I created back in college in 2006, and it wasn't until 2018 that I started writing the story, and I convinced the amazing artist to draw his adventure. So as you can see, Super Best Friend has been a long time in the making. And as our fan of ours and a fan of this podcast, I want you to know that you can go follow our pre-launch Kickstarter page and click Notify Me on Launch at superbestfriendcomic.com. The Kickstarter campaign will launch on January 19th. And newsflash, if we reach 75% of the funding goal in 48 hours, every backer will receive two bonus rewards as my thanks for donating early. You're going to get Thief, which is a PDF comic book story, which is the second story that I ever wrote featuring Captain Terrific. And you'll also get an HD art file of the very first drawing of Captain Terrific and Maddie Moore together that was ever drawn for this series. So I hope we can count on your pledge. I hope we can count on your support. I hope you will be a super best friend to super best friend by going checking out my new Kickstarter comic book, Super Best Friend, at superbestfriendcomic.com. And now to the episode. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason from Smallville Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or list from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour. And it's list time again.
Yes, and this is going to be a really good one because everybody that listens to this podcast know that as a boy from small town Kansas, how much I love Superman. And we have the CW Superman and Lois that is soon to be incoming. So we decided that this was a great week to talk about the best Superman stories. And for that list, we decided to bring in a very special guest. He is the current Not Bitter writer's assistant on Superman and Lois. He is the writer of the Crisis on Infinite teen dramas, and he is the author of Michael Effing Bay. Plus, he writes a little blog that you might have heard about for years if you're in sort of the Hollywood circles, the bitterscriptreader.blogspot.com. He is Adam Malinger. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
Thank you guys for having me on. This is going to be a fun one, I think.
I really think this is going to be a good one because, you know, and we'll talk about this more, that from your Twitter, I followed you for several years. You are a big Superman fan. Can I ask you, where did your fandom with Superman start?
I don't actually know. It's that long. Like, I know that my first introduction was not the Christopher Reeve film. I think it must have been the Super Friends cartoon and the Superpowers action figures, because I have a very vivid memory of watching the Christopher Reeve film for the first time while playing with the Superman action figures. And so I also have a comic book from 1983 that I'm pretty sure is my first comic book ever. So I would have been three then. So I'm guessing somewhere around the time I was three, I was watching cartoons and it started with like the old Super Friends show. But very quickly that spread to Christopher Reeve, and then around 1986 was when I was started getting the comic books regularly, and pretty much bought the comics regularly. Like, as we'll talk probably later, there's a point where like the books were coming out almost every week, and more or less from, like,
the very famous Triangle Era.
The Triangle Era, yeah. There is, my aunt had gotten me the John Byrne relaunch in 1986. She bought me the Man of Steel miniseries that relaunched. I got all of that at once. And so that was like a perfect starting point. And then for like the next 2 years after that, whenever I could convince my parents to buy me a stray issue here or there, I would pick it up. And the storyline that was the turning point for me, where like I was finally able to buy it week to week, is a storyline at the start of 1989 called Exile. And from that point on until the New 52 in 2011, I bought every mainline Superman comic between there. So that's the fandom that we're bringing to the backlog here.
I just want to say that that is such a pure and sweet and like too good for this world origin story for you and Superman. And I think very appropriate for this hero.
Well, that just means that we're going to have a very awesome conversation, I think. I love that. Especially, I love that you are a True Blue fan. And also, you are assisting the writing staff. And I believe you even got to write a script yourself of the newest iteration of Superman. So that's going to be really great.
That's right. I am writing an episode. And it, literally, like, I was working on the script today for the episode.
Oh, but, man. If you would have told me you were on script today, I would have said, you know, we can delay this.
No. This was perfect. After the week that has been going on here, that was nice to kind of, you know, I'm glad to finish my day job with Superman so I can hop on the internet and talk about Superman.
Oh, great. All right. Well, this is going to, I think this is going to be a great episode. All right, listeners, as you know, with our previous lists, this is everyone's personal favorites, not the objective best. And also, don't forget to tell us your top five Superman stories on our social medias. Ashley, where can they do that in case they forgot?
They can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at @GHLpodcast, because Geek History Lesson was too many letters.
All right. So here we go. We're going to start with our number fives. Best Superman story. Ashley, why don't you kick off this list?
So my number five, I'm going to give you the official title. And since you two are the Superman stands of this show, I want to see if either of you knows what the storyline is. It is Superman Annual number 11 from 1985.
Is that the man who had everything?
For the man who has everything.
Yeah. I thought I was being real cute and real clever. So when we decided to do this list, this was immediately on my short list. This is for The Man Who Has Everything, written by Alan Moore with art by Dave Gibbons. Most people are probably familiar with it from the 2004 Justice League, the animated series adaptation, also titled For the Man Who Has Everything, which kind of takes the storyline given to Superman and expands it out to sum up the rest of the Justice League. And then CW Supergirl also did a version of the story, which I thought was really, really cool.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yes, they did. This is the story of the Black Mercy, which TLDR is an alien plant bad guy who comes and imprints itself in Superman's chest. They develop a symbiotic relationship, and Superman lives out an Elseworlds tale, for all intents and purposes, of what it would have been like if he'd stayed on Krypton. And we get to engage in that thought experiment. And because it is Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons, it is one of the most beautiful, and I mean that emotionally and graphically, versions of what if Kal-El had stayed on Krypton that we get to see. There are super babies, there are headbands everywhere, and then Superman has to reconcile with what that knowledge is going to be carried forth as he continues on Earth as the last son of Krypton. And when you read this issue, when you revisit this issue like I did for this lesson, it's definitely 80s is all get out. It is very of the time, but it still transcends. And I think it is the quintessential version of this thought experiment. So I had to put it on my list, and I decided to kick off my number five with a story that's older than I am.
I think that's a great choice. It definitely deserves recognition in a top five, 100%. Adam.
All right.
We're gonna kick it off to your number five now.
Okay, so I do want to quickly explain my methodology and my five picks, because I have a bone to pick with a lot of like best of lists for characters, where people tend to pick like out of continuity stories, and it always leaves the impression that like the good stuff can't be done in the weekly or the ongoing storyline.
Breach, so brother, breach.
So I limited myself to one out of mainline continuity pick, and that is my number five. And it is a graphic novel that started as a mini series called Superman's Secret Identity, written by Kurt Busiek, beautiful art by Steve Immonen. And it almost looks painted. It's a really different technique they've got for the art here. And the hook for this story is, if I can sound a little like Patrick Stewart on Extras, what if this was the real world? What if Clark Kent existed in the real world? Not in the comic book world, but the real world. And this is a guy growing up in Kansas named Clark Kent, in a world where Superman is a fictional character, so essentially our world. And when he's a teenager, he wakes up one day and he discovers he has powers. And it's all about how you become Superman in a world where everyone knows Superman is a fictional character and your name is Clark Kent, so you've been teased about it your entire life. And it is a beautiful, emotional story that takes us through about four stages of this guy's life. Chapter one is him as a teenager. We see him as an adult meeting a woman named, of course, Lois. And, you know, later in life as he becomes a parent and then as a much older man. And it's really got the spirit of Superman in it, even though it's not the real Superman. I understand that Busick was very much inspired by Superboy from Earth Prime, who was a part of Crisis and who, since the story has come out, has kind of gone crazy and is a bad guy. But it's a really beautiful story, kind of about like one man and him as a parent, him as, you know, how he impacts the world, because he eventually starts operating as Superman, usually in secret. He kind of becomes like an urban myth. And I would recommend this almost just on the basis of the art alone, but the story is fantastic. And I think it's honestly my favorite thing Kurt Busiek has written.
I'm so glad that you put this on your list, because this was on my initial list and then I bumped it. So I'm glad that it is getting some love. We have talked about this a lot on the podcast.
This is on my list, but I won't say where yet.
Okay. Well, in the spirit of keeping cryptic, Jason, what's your number five?
My number five is a story that I think a lot of people don't know about. And Adam, I thought that's a very fair choice. I wanted to think about stories, especially for Superman, that really represented what I feel about the character. And for me, Superman is always very inspirational and very uplifting. And so I was trying to go for a lot of stories like that. So I'm sorry, and that, no knock on either one of you if you have Superman Red Sun. But Superman Red Sun is not on my list because, you know, it's not very uplifting to me.
No.
So number five for me is an issue from 1955. It is Superman number 96, The Girl Who Didn't Believe in Superman. And this is written by Batman co-creator Bill Finger.
Icon.
The artist is Wayne Boring. And this is basically the story about Alice Norton, who is a young blind girl. She's younger than 10 years old. I think she's 8 is what they say in the story. But she doesn't believe that Superman exists, because she cannot see him. So he does, it's this whole story. So he flies her around and she's like, that could just be a fan. And he bends things.
I like her.
He bends things up and she's like, well, that could be a trick. She thinks everything he does is a trick. So he goes through like all of his superpowers and everything. And then finally, Superman sort of gets a little frustrated because he's like, I don't know how to prove to this girl that I'm real and that I can do these things and I want to help her. And then he x-rays her and he realizes that he may know a way to restore her sight. And so, of course, the solution he comes up with, which I don't want to give away here in case anybody wants to read this story, is the solution that only Silver Age Superman would come up with. But this leads to this epic story of Alice Norton becoming famous in the paper of the Daily Planet, and all the Daily Planet readers sending her family money and her mother money, and they become famous, and it basically changes Alice's life for the better in ways that you will never predict. And I just love it because it's this charming little tale about faith and healing and growing up. And yes, it has very religious overtones, but that's fine because, like, I always think that Superman is the dream of all of us. He's our dreams and our inspirations. And I love that Superman, no matter what, will never stop trying to help us. And that's everything in this story. And I just think it's kind of great that it's written, the co-creator of Batman wrote one of the best Superman stories.
I was going to say religious overtones in a Moses analog, never.
Yeah. But Superman number 96 from 1955, the girl who didn't believe in Superman, is my number five.
And I'm just pointing this out because I can see Jason's notes. He even did the research where you can find the story in print.
Yeah,
shout out to that.
It's only ever been reprinted in Superman in the 50s, which is completely out of print right now. But
does exist.
It does exist. So Ashley, this is already a better list than I thought it was going to be. What is your number four?
Well, I'm so glad that you started the Superman being good to children, because for me, that's definitely a trend after the Black Mercy story in a lot of my picks. And I think that is one of the reasons why he resonates. And I picked a digital first issue from 2014, written by somebody who has become a friend of ours that Jason and I have referenced ad nauseum. In fact, if you go back to the first year of Geek History Lesson and check out our If We Control DC Comics, I believe we put him as the head of the Bat family, and that is Dear Superman, written by Josh Elder with art by Victor Ibanez. I apologize for my anglicized pronunciation of your name. And it is a story where Superman fights Metallo in Metropolis, so you get the fighty-fighty, but it is about children in a cancer ward and their letters to Superman, and it is about Superman trying to do his best by each and every one of them. It is the first Superman story that ever made me cry. It's one of the first Superman stories I ever read because I was an avowed Superman is lame comic book reader until I met Jason Inman, and then he proved me wrong, I'm happy to say. And it is the Superman story that to me is quintessentially Superman because, yes, he does the big fighty-fighty. Yes, he does the punch-em-ups, but he is here to help the people who need the help most, as personified by children. And when you know that Josh Elder did battle cancer himself, I think it makes the story even more touching and even more poignant. It's a story that I would love to see adapted, I think, into like an animated episode. I think it would be really beautiful there. And I would have been remiss if just with my own relationship with the character, if I didn't add that to this. And I also think it speaks to the fact that sometimes when you look at publishing from the big two, I think we like to poo-poo digital first stories. And this goes, I think, up there with all lauded stories and should be celebrated. So Dear Superman is my number four.
It's such a great choice. This almost made my list. This is from the Adventures of Superman digital series, Adam. I don't know if you've... It's really good. They reprinted it. They're sort of bringing that back.
It's got a great Sean Galloway, whose name is Cheeks. His artist name is Cheeks. It's got great covers.
And I want to let the listeners know, fun fact, the reason why we're now friends with Josh Elder is because I read the USA Today article that was covering this story. I read the story. I was so moved by this story that I emailed Josh blind and just complimented and was like, this is amazing and stuff like that. And that struck up the friendship, and we're still friends with him to this day. Mm-hmm. But Dear Superman is almost, if I were to do a number six, this would be my number
six.
It's really, really good. All right, Adam, what is your number four?
Okay. I wanted to pick something that was representative of the Rebirth era in 2016 when they sort of relaunched. And this is an era of stories, for those who don't know, with Clark and Lois and their 10-year-old son, John Kent, living in Smallville. And so the issue I've picked is Superman 7 from 2016. So if you're looking on Comixology, look for like the 2016 date. And it's an issue called Our Town. And it's a simple one where Clark wants to take the family to the fair to do some family time. And he has made a deal with Lois. He is not going to turn into Superman no matter what happens. And so it's a fun little character issue with the Kent family, you know, going to the fair, riding the rides, interacting with the residents of Smallville. And towards the end, some shenanigans happen with some criminals, and Superman, Clark has to slip away and be Superman without being Superman. And it's I'm making it sound like maybe the most boring thing in the world, but I just love that Superman is a character where you can do these kind of one-off issues that don't have to have a villain, and that you can kind of do these family stories, these heartwarming stories, and it doesn't feel out of place. Like, I sort of struggle to imagine a writer who would be able to do that with Batman and not have Batman fans coming after them. and this, I love it. It's my favorite issue of Rebirth. And I think it's really representative of kind of like the family style that Rebirth opened up when you give Clark and Lois a kid. And the TV show, Superman and Lois, we're not doing Rebirth, but I feel like there's a lot of similar DNA in there. The kids are older. We have two kids on our show. Like, it's not the exact same thing. So I don't want to leave people with the impression.
And that's a Geekcaster lesson exclusive. Yeah. No, I'm just joking.
I'm very, very careful that nothing I say here will be news to anybody. If you're following everything, nothing I say will be news. Say something that's been reported, but it's been out there.
The kids, they were Jonathan and Jordan. Like, it was reported when they were cast. Woo.
Yeah. No. So we have sort of that kind of DNA in the show. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're a fan of Rebirth, you probably will enjoy some of the stuff we're doing, but I don't want to give the impression that like what we're doing is specifically based on Rebirth. But it is the kind of story that I enjoy, and the kind of thing when we were in the room, I would always be pushing for, can we do something like this issue? So that is my number four right there, Superman 7.
So if I may,
please,
my entire number three is basically the Tomasi Gleason Superman Rebirth Superman family. Yeah. And but I specifically in my notes mentioned this issue. So when Adam brought it up, I was like, I've got to just tack onto it because it's going to be my next choice anyway. one of the best things I think about Superman, and it's something that everyone in fandom loves to discuss, is that I believe he is Clark Kent. I believe that is his true identity. I have different feelings about Batman. And marrying him and giving him a child was something that I didn't know that I needed. But literally the second I saw the original concept art of Jonathan Kent, I was like, I love this boy. I don't know who he is. He's perfect. I love Super Sons. And I think that the Tomasi and Gleason run in particular is really powerful. And this issue sums up what is so special about him and why I think he's still relevant to a modern crowd, because Superman can definitely feel like a character with one foot in the past from when he was created. And fun fact, Mr. J. Cinnamon owns a piece of original art from the Superman Rebirth run.
Well, that's only because it was a gift from you.
That's right.
But you do. So I thank you for that. You know, I want to... Superman Rebirth run is not on my list, but you guys,
how dare you?
Well, I just feel lucky that Superman has such a bountiful number of great stories that I actually had to be very choosy about what made it on this list. Mm-hmm. And this one was another one that almost made it on there. And Adam, I want to go back to your point, because there is another standalone series or standalone couple of issues in that run that I love as well. I love the one where they go on the field trip and they go to the Civil War cemeteries.
Yes.
That's a one that like really hit to me. But if I were to name like a specific point out of that entire run, like Superman 7, especially how it ends on the Ferris wheel, is so genius with that Jorge Jimenez art. Especially he drew the art in that entire run is fantastic.
That was
I was remiss in not giving the credits. I should say that. it was Pete Tomasi and Patrick Gleason writing and Jorge Jimenez on art, and he's great with facial expressions. I'm looking at that page right now where they're on the roller coaster, and what happens is there's over the loudspeaker, they're hearing about that something was thwarted by some guy in costume, and Lois is realizing that Superman, you know, broke his promise, and Clark is kind of getting like this embarrassed, like, uh-oh, I've been caught look. And it's a progression of panels that I wish I could show the picture up there right now, but it's great. Sorry. I'm sidetracking us.
I will grab it and I will definitely put it on the social media. But I also believe this was one of Jorge Jimenez's first forays in DC Rebirth, because he was drawing Super Sons and Super Sons kept getting pushed back. So this was like one of his first times, I believe, drawing one of the regular series. And now he's like the king of Superman and king of DC.
Because he was the fill-in. It was him and Doug Monkey.
Yes,
were the fill-ins
another icon.
When Patrick couldn't draw the issues.
Yeah.
Great.
So I believe that rounds out to being Jason's number four is next.
Now we need to learn. Yes, my number four, because we already know what your number three is, correct?
Yes.
My number four is from one of my favorite Superman ongoing series of all time, and I think an underrated Superman ongoing series, and that is specifically Superman Adventures number 41. This is a story called 22 Stories in a Single Bound. Mm. Now, Superman Adventures is one of DC's tie-in books. It tied in specifically to the Bruce Timm Superman, the animated series. And this was, you know, an all-ages book. Every issue was a done-in-one. And a lot of people don't know this, but Mark Miller, writer of The Ultimates and later Kick-Ass and Hawk.
Gritty comic book writer.
his first DC work is writing for Superman Adventures. And this was his final issue on Superman Adventures. And so what he decided to do is he did a clever collection of one-page stories drawn by a variety of different artists, including Darwin Cook of DC New Frontier.
Who also designed the title sequence for Batman Beyond.
Yes. So it really becomes a sweet and hopeful collection of basically the secret weapon of Superman's storytelling. And that is the secret weapon of the Superman storytelling, I think, is his supporting cast and the city of Metropolis. There, every supporting cast member gets a page, including Lobo. You have the story of Jimmy Olsen facing down one of his fears. And then the page that put this on the list for me was the page that perfectly defines Superman to me. The last page of the issue, this is slight spoilers for an issue that came out in the year 2000, but the final page shows the dreams of everyone in the Superman supporting cast. Like Jimmy is dreaming that like he's rich and him and Superman are having the best day ever. And when it cuts to Superman, they show an empty bed and the curtain moving like Superman just flew out the window to go save somebody, because at midnight he's not dreaming. He's out helping us. And so that's, for me, everything you need to know about Superman. And that's why 22 Stories in a Single Bound, never been collected as far as I know. Superman Adventures number 41 is my number four.
Also, I mean, to be fair, debatable whether Superman needs to sleep or not.
That's fair.
You know, that's another ongoing, I think, geek debate.
That's fair.
Okay, so for number threes, mine, I already said, is like Rebirth Superman, the Gleason Tomasi stuff. So I think that punts it back to Adam.
Okay, so what we've got here is, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm big about like the individual episode as being, you know, something that we're slipping away from, like doing a standalone episode. And so I want to make
sure I'm with you, brother. I had a couple
standalone issues. And so I had the last one, and this one is possibly my favorite Superman standalone issue. It is Superman 64. From the cover date is February 92, but it came out in December of 91. And this is an issue about Superman answering his fan mail on Christmas Eve.
I know
where
this
every
issue.
Year, you know this issue?
Oh, it's so good, man. Great choice.
Written by Dan Jurgens, who I've tried to verify this fact some official way, and I can't do the exact numbers on this. But as far as I can tell, and I even asked Dan himself, I think Dan has written more Superman stories than anybody alive. So written by Dan Jurgens, art by Jackson Geiss, who must be filling in because Dan was usually the artist on this book. Dan must have been doing something else at the time. But it's every year Superman goes to the Metropolis post office and letters from fans. And there's a lot of they nod and they're like some of these people are people who just want, you know, him to go look for buried treasure, some get rich quick. But the heart of the story is the difference that Superman can make for individual people. Like he gets a letter from a boy who, you know, his father needs a heart transplant. And, you know, doctors say there's no chance he'll survive. But you know, I know that Superman can save him. And it's Superman going and having to talk to this boy and talk about what he can and what he can't do. And doing a couple other like good deeds, heartwarming holiday deeds, all the stuff you would expect out of a holiday story. But I think it's the perfect Superman story, again, without a villain. Because it speaks to him as an inspirational figure, and it's about the good you could do in this world if you were Superman, beyond just punching villains. And it's also a special one because what I did for the Superman and Lois writing staff this Christmas is I got copies of this issue for everyone, and Dan Jurgens was very nice enough that I mailed it to him, and he signed and personalized each of those copies for the writing staff and the supporting staff on Superman and Lois. So everybody got a nice little Christmas gift.
May I ask you a follow-up question on that?
Yes.
Because I know Dan lives in Minnesota or Michigan.
Minnesota.
Minnesota. So when did you mail those off to him?
I sent that to him. It was like the first week of November. I had had the idea.
Oh, wow, that's
October
a quick turnaround.
And
he's organized.
And I had the idea in October, and I emailed him and I said, "Hey, I had this idea, Dan. If I sent these to you, would it be, you know, too much trouble to do this?" He says, "No, absolutely." And so then I went on eBay, and fortunately, there were exactly the same number of copies between eBay and Amazon of this issue that I needed for everyone. Like I had ended up with one extra copy.
It's like a Christmas miracle.
It was a Christmas miracle. And
it
so
was
then
a super
I was waiting.
Miracle.
Exactly. And so for the next 2 weeks, I was just waiting for these to come in from various places. And once I had them, I just boxed them up and sent them to Dan. And he was, you know, nice enough to do that. And he sent it back to me with more than enough time. And the staff all got a very nice, unexpected gift this year.
I know. I saw that on Twitter and I thought it was a genius gift.
I also want to say that like long-term listeners of Geek History Lesson know that we also had Dan Jurgens lending his talents and his time to our Drawing Charity Drive for Service members this year. And like, he is truly a good-hearted, sweet man. So there's no wonder that he has made such an imprint, I think, on Superman.
Yep.
Dan Jurgens, actual Superman, I'm saying it right now.
I believe it. Have you ever seen him in the
Definitely.
Same place? I haven't.
Now that you mention it, no, yeah. But nicest guy yes. in the world. Dan is fantastic. And he was one of the first people to congratulate me when I got hired on Superman, actually.
Oh, that's really cool. All right. So I believe, Adam, that was your number three, correct?
That was number three, correct.
All right, cool. Now we move to my number three. This is the most recent addition in the chronology of Superman stories on my list. This is a story that I read last year, and especially in the terms of 2020, and you know, 2020 I think was a difficult year for every single person in the world, but this was a story that put a smile on my face. This was a story that made me cry, and this story is Superman Smashes the Klan. This is by Gene Luen Yang, and a name that is going to be very difficult for me to pronounce, but I'm going to try it anyway. Guhiru?
I think it's Gurihiro.
Gurihiro.
Longtime collaborator of Gene's, actually. They did the Avatar books together.
Yes. This is the Harvey Award winner for Best Children or Young Adult book of last year. Basically, it is the year is 1946, and teenagers Roberta and Tommy Lee have just moved with their parents from Chinatown to the center of Metropolis, the home of the famous superhero Superman. And Tommy makes friends quickly while Roberta pines for home. And then one night, the family awakens to find their home surrounded by the clan of the Fiery Cross. Superman leaps into action, but his exposure to a mysterious green rock has left him weak. And can Roberta and Tommy help him smash the clan? When I first heard about this book actually made my list as best comic book for last year on a previous podcast. And I did not expect this book to emotionally affect me as much as it did. But I think this is one of those books that is like the right time and the right place, because the ending with Roberta and Superman brought tears to my eye. And this is one of the best, because I honestly, when I first heard about this book, I thought they were just going to kind of retell the story of the radio plays, of the Superman radio plays, where they revealed all the secrets of the Ku Klux Klan. And Gene Yang is a brilliant writer, and he's a brilliant children's writer, and he's a brilliant Superman writer. And of course, he took it to another level. He made it to a level that made Superman timely. It made Superman with an emotional punch. And also, this really does feel like the 1930s, 1940s Superman, but it doesn't feel dated at any point. And that is why it easily climbed to the top of my list for best Superman stories. And Adam, if you have not read this book, I highly recommend it immediately.
I read it within the last 2 months, because our writer's PA is a massive Superman nerd like me. And he said, you've got to read this story. And so I made a point of checking that one out. And everything you said is true. It is a great story.
Nice. All right, Ashley, mm-hmm. We're down to the number two.
Mm-hmm. This is a book that I read literally yesterday. Because, as I mentioned on the podcast previously, I am in a book club that focuses on reading things for social justice and for awareness. And so my turn to pitch something to read is coming up. I got March on the ticket last year. And so I said, well, you know, Jason said Superman Smashes the Klan is really good, so I should probably read
it. Is that your number two?
Yes, I'm also just like a diehard Gene Yang fan, so there was no way. I also want to say that I am a huge fan of the DC Kids line. Jason, I've been saying for a while that it's some of the most exciting comics consistently coming out of DC right now at the time of this recording. And I will say that I disproportionately see women reading it, but when this book came out, every grown man I know who loves Superman took to the internet to say, I was in actual tears. This book is amazing. Please read it. Like, this book of everything that I'm going to recommend, I think transcends the most. And it made me cry, which is no great feat, because literally everything in the world makes me cry. But this is, I think Superman Smashes the Klan is a book that is going to be lauded for a long, long time. It's a very special book. I don't have a ton to add besides what Jason already said. So I'm really glad that between Jason and Adam, they've done some heavy lifting for me in terms of my description. So I'm just going to fold here and ask our great guest what his number two is.
My number two is, okay, this we have the main
is
event here.
Is it Superman Smashes the Klan?
It is not Superman Smashes the Klan. No, I told you I wanted to showcase the regular continuity,
yeah.
And this is the ultimate epic of the continuity I grew up with. I am picking Reign of the Superman, which is the mega Return of Superman epic from 1993. It spanned issues, I've got this in front of me, Action Comics 687 through 692, Man of Steel 22 through 26, Superman 78 through 82, Adventures of Superman 501 to 505. Currently available, the part of the story is it's in two trades. One is named Reign of the Superman. One is Return of Superman. They're both the story that was originally published as Reign of the Superman. And this is how Superman comes back to life after he dies in Doomsday. Written by Roger Stern, Dan Jurgens, Louise Simonson, and Carl Kiesel. Art by Dan Jurgens and Brett Breeding, Tom Grummet and Doug Hazelwood, Jackson Geis and Dennis Rodier, John Bogdanov and Dennis Janke. Okay. Woof. But this is what kicks off with, you know, the story starts. Superman's dead. There are four guys running around Metropolis, each laying claim to his legacy in some way. There's a cyborg that seems to be Superman rebuilt. There's a brutal vigilante type who tends to be known as like the last son of Krypton. There is a teenage clone called Superboy, and there's a guy in a steel suit. And this storyline, as we go through and the revelations of which one is Superman, where Superman is, where he's coming back, who they're fighting, builds on so much continuity that had been accumulating in the books for the previous 5 years. It was like watching a season six finale and realizing that the first five seasons had dropped all the pieces that made this possible. And then it becomes the launching point for so much more of the continuity in the 90s as Steel and Superboy spin off into their own titles. I think it's the defining book of the 90s for Superman. I think it is this writer-artist team at their best. There are some wonderful misdirects here to keep us from the real thing. And it's a story that reminds us why Superman is important by taking him away from us for the first half. And then he comes back and reclaims his mantle and takes out somebody who has tarnished his name, let's say. So
it's
all
also,
of that to say, yeah.
I was going to say, it's also so iconic they made it into an animated movie, which is great.
More than once.
Yes, that's true. Very true.
I haven't seen the second one. The first one was such a loose adaptation that I'm like, oh, it's almost
I'm going to convince you to watch the second one right now because they did it as a two-parter. They did it as a Death of Superman and Reign of the Superman. Death of Superman is written by Peter J. Tomasi. It's excellent. And then Reign of the Superman is written by Tim Sheridan, who has worked on a bunch of the other animated shows. And he wrote recently that newest, I think, Superman for Tomorrow, Man of Tomorrow.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm.
I got quite liked the remake sort of animated sequels than the original one. But man, you're correct. That storyline has probably defined Superman more so in the last 30 years than any other storyline.
It also spins out a bunch of great characters who should always have their own books, like Steel.
Yes, yes.
And
huge Steel fan, huge John Kent, not John Kent. Oof, they're going to murder me.
John Henry
Irons. Huge Connor Kent fan. I do love John Kent. Don't kill me for that either. But like, I love the leather jacket Superboy. I love Connor Kent. And I'm glad that Bendis brought him back lately. But yeah, this is, for me, this is everything that a Superman story was in my teenage years. This was, you know, the perfect Superman story with some of the greatest art teams, I think, that have ever been on Superman.
And if you buy the omnibus, it can be used as a weapon against criminals who break into your house.
That's
definitely
true.
It is heavy. That's the only reason I haven't bought it, because it is large.
Well, and there are some printings of the omnibus that are missing issues.
Yes.
And missing pieces of issues. So I think they fixed it in the latest printing of it, where you finally do truly have everything. But the version I have is I have all five trades, where they've got Doomsday in one, Funeral for a Friend, which also almost made this list, in another, the two parts here, Reign of the Superman and Return of Superman, and then sort of Doomsday as like the epilogue to the story.
Yeah, they have a cool, like, if you line them up on your shelf, I think they make the S shield on the spine, right?
They do, the bleeding S shield from the Doomsday storyline.
The bleeding S shield.
If you own the original copies of this, don't take them to a comic book store. That's the end of my PSA. They're not worth anything. They printed so many of them.
I will say that luckily a couple of years ago, because I mentioned it on a podcast talking about this storyline, and I luckily, very kind, I cannot remember who, I think it was Mr. Tom Trainer, I could be wrong, a great listener of this podcast, he sent me a signed, Dan Jurgens, Brett Breeding signed Superman 75.
But see, that's worth something.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it's worth
it. I have three of those.
All right, let's go to my number two. Adam, I didn't know about the incontinuity rules. My other two are out of continuity, but I don't care. Well, I don't care.
I'm worried I'm going to break one of your rules with my number one. So
It's all good.
They're all suggestions. They're not really rules.
My number two is All-Star Superman. And the reason why it's my number two is, well, let's first, this is of course, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's brilliant vision of the Man of Steel. Of course, the credits for this are inked by Jamie Grant, lettered by Phil Bowsman and Travis Lanham, and the colors was Jamie Grant. And this is sort of an out of continuity, in continuity, labors of Hercules of Superman as he sort of reinstates all the bonkers Silver Age super paraphernalia, the multiple reboots, the multiple crises. This is Grant Morrison doing the thing that he does all the time, where basically it's like everything that ever happened to Superman, including Electric Superman, gets referenced in this story, and it's like it all happened to Superman. And this story starts out with the single best recap of Superman's origin that has ever been done. It was done so well that it was basically lifted word for word in the Man of Steel movie, and that is doomed planet, desperate scientist, last hope, kindly couple. But Grant Morrison has said across many interviews that this was the labors of Hercules through Superman. This was Superman's last 12 labors because, of course, Superman flies too close to the sun. He finds out he's dying. It's weirdly a Death of Superman story. And it walks Superman through basically him wrapping up all the loose ends. We get another, you know, callback to Smallville. We get another callback to Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen, until we learn the ultimate destiny of Superman in the story, which I will not spoil in case anybody out there has not read All-Star Superman. But I kind of love this story. I kind of love this ending for Superman. And it's even referenced, if you've read other Grant Morrison's works, he ties into this in his very famous Justice League 1 million storyline. And this was also made into a brilliant, brilliant animated feature written by the late, great Dwayne McDuffie. I don't know if I've told the story on the podcast before or not, but one of the first things I ever did in Los Angeles when I moved out here almost 10 years ago was I was able to go to the Paley Fest event for All-Star Superman, and I was able to meet Dwayne McDuffie. And that event was 3 weeks before he died. And I still have the copy of the Blu-ray that I got him to sign, because they gave out copies of Blu-rays to everybody that attended that event. And it's like one that, so this might color my perception, but I, even without that, I still think this is one of the greatest Superman stories of all time. This is also, I think, a pretty reader-friendly story. I think if you don't know a lot about Superman, I think you can read this and get into it, but I think it definitely hits more if you know the history and you know all the references that Grant Morrison is making. But All-Star Superman is my number two.
Okay, so it's time for the ultimate choices. It's time for all of our number ones. And, you know, Jason, it's interesting that you said that you think this is pretty new reader-friendly, because I think this was the, I think All-Star Superman was the first like complete Superman story that I ever read, because you gave me the single issue.
I think because when we first met, you were not keen on Superman, and I said, read the first 5 issues of All-Star Superman, and if you don't want to read the second...
No, you made me read the first 6.
If you didn't want to read the first 6, then I was like, then you'll never like anything Superman.
Yeah, so All-Star Superman is my number one.
Yeah.
and it's specifically All-Star Superman number 6. Because that's the issue where, spoiler alert, that Jason wasn't going to spoil, but I'll spoil, Pa Kent dies.
What?
I know.
What?
Spoiler alert.
Oh, Ashley, we're going to have to edit this episode now.
This old man. and it really touched me because my father is also passed away, and there is something about Dead Dad's Club where you just understand each other, and it was a great in for this character for me, because this issue specifically, and it's a lot like Dear Superman, it does have a big punchy fight 'em up moment, courtesy of a character from the Reign of the Superman. But it focuses on, and I said that I love Clark Kent, and Clark Kent to me is the true identity, it focuses on Clark's relationship to Jonathan and how powerless Superman is when Pa is felled by a heart attack. And if you've ever had anyone in your life die, but specifically a parent, your parents are your heroes, you think they're infallible. To me, this issue really ties up what those feelings are so eloquently, even against the backdrop of the DC universe, which is very extravagant and it is theatrical, and Superman is completely theatrical in that costume, but it broke my heart. And the cover with Superman and the best boy next to Pa's grave makes me so sad.
I think it's the best cover of the entire series, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely in contention, but for me, this is Superman And we've said before that if Grant Morrison decides to start a religion someday, that we will be the first followers. And this just lays out what I think Grant Morrison does so very, very well. Obviously complemented by amazing art from Frank Quitely. But that is, not only does he take... I'm sorry, they just came out as gender fluid, so I'm sorry, I'm correcting my pronouns. Not only did they take some of the best and kookiest aspects from Superman's history, including some wild Jimmy Olsen stuff.
You mean some great Jimmy Olsen stuff?
I didn't say it wasn't great, okay, but it's wild.
Well, weirdly, think about also, this relates back to Adam's number two. Doomsday is an all-star Superman.
Yes. Lois Lane also gets superpowers. Like, we get some Silver Age stuff going on here, but it all feels significant. It all feels worthy of the universe. And then to tie it up with the stakes of an epic of Greek mythology, like, that's what comic books are. And it's so ironic to me that comic books are a truly American art form, and that Superman, maybe the most American superhero, in my opinion, is best rendered by a Scottish person. So, yeah, it's just the Superman story that makes me feel the most. So, of all the placements on this list, I always knew All-Star Superman was going to be number one, and I knew Jason was going to ruin it and put it lower down on the list.
Oh, sorry.
All right. So, Adam, tell us why All-Star Superman is your number one.
Whoa! I actually very specifically was like, they're going to pick All-Star Superman, yeah, so I'm not going to waste a pick there. And I do want to back up really quickly, because one thing I wanted to toss in about Reign of the Superman is there is a really terrible, wretched video put out by a screenwriter whose name I'm not going to say.
Yes.
That alleges that this whole... first of all, there's factual stuff that's completely wrong, like objectively factual stuff. Like, he gets issue numbers wrong. But it alleges that whole thing was just a sales stunt. It was not. It was storyline driven. And so if anybody ever tells you that Reign of the Superman was just done by DC as a stunt, you can tell them that that guy has no idea what he's talking about and does not understand Superman as evidenced by everything he has ever had to say on the character. That
correct.
Is the last thing I will say about
correct.
That guy.
By the way, Adam, if I'm right or wrong, please correct me. I always understood that the reason why they did Death of Superman was because they wanted to marry Lois and Clark, but the series Superman, The New Adventures of Lois and Clark, wanted them to hold on that. So they decided, let's just kill him.
That's exactly it. I've heard this story from multiple people, and I've read it in many interviews. Have no reason to doubt it. Like, 75 was earmarked for the wedding. There's some discrepancy whether it was 75 or it was Adventures of Superman 500, which was about 2 months later. But either way, they were building towards a wedding in those issues, and they got told, no, the TV show's coming. Can you delay this? And everybody seems to remember this differently. I think the consensus is it was Jerry Ordway who piped up in the room and said, why don't we just kill him? And, you know, they all had a good laugh because I guess that was a running gag at these super summits when they would be planning the stories. And someone said, okay, what if we did do that? And they started thinking through, yeah, we haven't done a Death of Superman story yet. Let's do that and treat it as if it was real. Like, how does it affect the world? And that was what led to Doomsday, which became this much bigger phenomenon than they anticipated at the time. And their plan to bring him back was originally what you see in Adventures of Superman 500, where it's just John Kent dragging him back from the afterlife. And once they saw the hype that Doomsday was getting, they realized they needed a much bigger epic to bring him back. And so the result was Reign of the Superman. But it wasn't like sales driven by any means. It was story driven. It was the writers going, okay, this epic story needs an epic ending, basically.
Well, and each and every one of us has lived through several comic book sales driven events from many different companies, from independent companies. You can always tell those stories, and those stories don't last. Reign of the Superman mm-hmm. lasts and has had the impact it has because it's an incredible story.
Correct. Correct. All right. So, Adam, let's find
my number one.
What is
That's
your
right.
number one?
My number one, apparently, since we were taking Superman stories, there was nothing that said specifically comic books. And so I think if I was to go with my North Star for Superman, it all has to go back to the first Christopher Reeve film directed by Richard Donner. I mean, that is, I think that really defines Superman so strongly that to this day, a lot of people still think of Christopher Reeve as like the quintessential Superman. And beyond that, we would not have any of these superhero films we would have today if it wasn't for that movie, because that movie is the Citizen Kane of comic book movies right there. Christopher Reeve is the best person who has ever been cast as a comic book superhero. And there are things in that movie that people don't realize were not in the comic book. And it is, they accept it as part of the lore, not realizing that it was Donner inventing that. Like, the conception of Krypton had never been done that way before. The idea that there were crystals that carried, you know, all of this knowledge and everything, that's unique to the movie. The idea that the fortress looks like that is unique to the movie. And there are people, the comics since have picked this up and assimilated some of it and all of that. But there is so much there that originates, so much that that movie originates that becomes mainstream part of Superman, that you cannot talk about the history of Superman without talking about what Richard Donner and uncredited writer Tom Mankiewicz did on that film. And so that for me is why it had to be number one, because it defines so much of the last 40 years of superhero films and of the character.
I also believe, from everything that I understood, that that is also the first mention of Smallville being Kansas.
I've heard that. I'm not enough of a historian of the Silver Age to say certainly, but I have seen that fact cited elsewhere.
I've heard that as well, because like it's hard. It's also a fact that's very hard to confirm unless you literally read every Superman comic book that was ever published in the 70s or 60s.
I believe you two can manage it.
Oh, Lord. Yes, and our infinite free schedules.
Yes.
But that's what I've always heard, is that it was Donner in the script that said it's in Kansas, because before then, a lot of people thought it was on the East Coast. And Adam, I also apologize. Superman the movie, excellent choice. You know, we were thinking more comic books, but you know what? It definitely deserves a mention, so we will allow it. You are the guest.
And you gave a great defense.
And you gave a great defense. So number one.
No. You said Superman stories, not Superman.
Hey, it's fair.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor.
I should have been more clear. You are correct.
Now I'm now I'm a little bit offended that I didn't think to look up the serials.
Oh, some Superman the Animated Show would have made it on some of mine.
Yeah. Okay, Jason. Now you're going to tell us why All-Star Superman is actually your number one.
No, my number one actually was Adam's number five. My number one is Superman: Secret Identity, written by Kurt Busiek and art by Stuart Immonen. And like he said before, it's a clever twist on Superman's origins, where basically the main character is a Kansas farm boy who just happens to be named Clark Kent. He lives in Kansas. He's the butt of many Superman-related jokes, but then he soon discovers that he has the ability to fly. And in one of the versions of this story where they repackaged it and remade it a trade, Kurt Busiek said that this was a leftover tale from the 90s that he wanted to do about Superboy Prime, as Adam mentioned earlier. And that was when DC was like, no, we did Crisis on Infinite Earths. There are no Superboy Primes. You need to slow your roll, Kurt Busiek.
Yeah, and Final Crisis or Infinite Crisis isn't coming for a little while yet.
And so he pitched it as an Elseworlds. And I actually avoided this storyline for a long, long, long time, because I was like, I don't care about some kid who, you know, figures out that he's Clark Kent. But I think the humanity and the heart in this story is so strong that this character that is not the Superman that we know classically, to me, so embodies the morality and the emotions and the themes of Superman more so than some of the other Superman stories that I've mentioned, that's why this became my number one. You know, it's a very naturalistic story. The colors are very rustic. It's almost muted. It's like the most muted Stuart Immonen has ever been. And it really allows you to focus on Clark. And, you know, when I think about best Superman stories, as I said very early on when I started the list, I'm always looking for the story of a boy who's just trying to make the world better. And that's what Superman's Secret Identity is for me. It is this ultimate story about this guy who gets the powers of Superman, is like, well, I'm going to live like Superman, and I'm going to do everything I can to make the world a better place. And I also deny any of our listeners or anybody that listens to the podcast in the future, when you get to the scene where we finally get the big reveal about his daughters,
I was going to say, if you didn't mention that, I love them.
I don't think you're human if your heart doesn't grow two sizes. So Superman's Secret Identity is my number one, because like it just so embodies Superman to me. And that is all of our best Superman stories, everybody.
Woo, not as much crossover as I thought there was going to be. And oh my gosh, can you believe Red Sun didn't make the list? Someone is screaming at their iPhone.
Well, everybody out there listening, again, send us your lists. And if you want to hear more Superman talk with Adam, we are going to have an episode of Geekish Lesson Extra on our Patreon over at patreon.com/Jawin. We're going to be asking Adam some of his favorite Superman things. It's going to be a conversation all Superman that you can only hear over there if you go support the podcast over on Patreon. And we want to thank all our super fans that do that already. You heard Adam's list. You know that's going to be a great conversation. All right, so let's move into the recommended reading. Ashley, very briefly, what is that for anybody listening?
So if you have enjoyed this and you want to read any or all of the things that we have suggested, if you go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, we have cool little Amazon widgets. You go and buy them in the format of your choice, and you steal money out of Jeff Bezos' pocket and put them back in ours.
That's right. The top three choices of all three of us will be available on there. You can click on it and pick it up immediately. So make sure you go and do that. Adam, you've been an amazing guest, sir. And please tell everybody out there that is listening to this podcast where they can find you online and if you have any projects that they should check out.
Well, let's see. You can find me online at my blog, The Bitter Script Reader, at thebitterscriptreader.blogspot.com. I'm on Twitter as The Bitter Script Reader. My handle, because Bitter Script Reader is too long for that, is BITTRSCRPTREADR. But if you just search for Bitter Script Reader, I'll pop up. As far as projects, I have an episode of Superman and Lois appearing sometime. I can't say which episode it is, but you'll see it at some point after it premieres this season. What's expiring actually probably within minutes right now is Crisis on Infinite Teen Dramas, which was a massive crossover I wrote between all teen dramas. We put it out there as a live read for charity. I don't know if this is the last time we'll put it out. Just keep your eyes out if we ever put it out again. We seem to have bad luck because we put it out the week of the election and decided that the holiday time until now would be the perfect time to just drop it on people who missed it. And the last week of things has not been the best time to be pushing your own material.
That is correct.
So that's really all I have to plug at the moment. You can always just find me at my blog or on Twitter.
And go find his book, Michael F. Bay, on Amazon, everybody.
We will also put it on the recommended reading.
It'll be in the recommended reading as well. Don't forget, everybody, to follow and subscribe and click download on this podcast everywhere you listen to the podcast. That's on Spotify. That is on iHeartRadio. It's on a multitude of places. Click follow. And if you are listening to this podcast and you know somebody out there that's a huge Superman fan, then suggest this podcast to them. Tell them, hey, Geek History Lesson, three awesome people did three awesome lists. You should check it out. Well, thank you for helping to grow our listener base. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jawin. That's at J-A-W-I-I-N. You can follow Ashley on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And now we're at hashtag stick around, the last section of our podcast, where we make sure you stuck through all the plugs. Adam, we're going to ask you a question really briefly here. What, if you had to think, you did talk, I have a feeling that I might be able to guess your answer, but I won't. If you had to say favorite Superman writer, who would you choose if somebody asked you that question?
I think I'd have to say Dan Jurgens, because he's had such influence on the character, you know, for over 30 years at this point. I think his first Superman story is in 1988. He was on the regular books starting in 1989 and was writing it through 1999. And then he came back with Rebirth for what was essentially 4 years worth of stories compressed into 2 years. And so I think nobody has had their hands on as many Superman stories I've loved as Dan Jurgens. And I think in terms of really understanding the character, there are certainly a lot of great writers who've touched him over the years. But I think just in terms of the sheer number of great stories, it'd be crazy to say anyone beats Dan at that point.
I would have to agree with you that. I mean, when I think Superman, I always think about the image I see in my head is the Dan Jurgens art of Superman from the 90s. And I think you're absolutely correct. Like, I think if just for terms of creation of Doomsday, the creation of John Kent, all these different things, he has impacted Superman so much. Ashley, if somebody was asking you favorite Superman writer, what would your answer be?
Well, I don't have the wealth of reading knowledge that
totally
either
fine.
Of you do. But I mean, I would want to say Grant Morrison, just because they wrote my favorite story. But I mean, if you're looking at it in terms of overall impact, there's no debate that it's Dan, with John Byrne, I guess, as a close second, probably.
You know who else I would throw out there? Louise Simonson.
I was like, this is the creators.
Roger Stern.
I was going to say Simon & Schuster, but I was like, that's wrong.
That's a great thing is that there have been a lot.
Tomasi and Gleason are definitely going to be up there in the coming years, I think.
When Superman's good, he's excellent. You know, that's the thing. Like, Superman is one of those characters I find that, like, his stuff is either, like, rocking and rolling, like it's volcano lava, or it's just, like, it's over there.
Oh, if I can also throw out a team that I generally think is very good but underrated is the Action Comics Aaron Cooter, Greg Pak team up.
Oh, agreed.
I think they did some really special stuff. And shout out for creating Baca, the little blue guy who I love.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Geek History Lesson. Adam, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you guys for having me. This was a blast.
It was an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I am Jason Still from Smallville Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Class is now super dismissed.